This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So let's take a look at the new companies bill. It's expected to be tabled in this session of Parliament, which convenes today. Now, according to Screen and Co. partner Li Shi, quoted in The Edge Daily, he says that it's going to be quite a difficult one because this new companies bill may see company directors having to balance between doing what's best for the entity and also acting upon the demands of shareholders.
That's right. Some of the highlights that are coming out of this bill include you don't have to specify your objects, or I take it as objectives, right? Mm-hmm. Companies can be incorporated with a single individual compared to what they have to do right now is to gather a bunch of directors to set up your company. There is no need to have more than one director. You can survive with one resident director. No AGMs needed for private companies, but shareholders holding a 5% stake can request for one, and directors' remuneration specifically can be approved at a general meeting. I think this kind of amendments to the bill came up because in the Petra Padana case, the court ruled against the directors for the shareholders. The shareholders sued because Petra Padana apparently sold the directors of that company sold more of a subsidiary than approved by shareholders.
That's right. Yeah. So this was back, I think, a couple of years ago. But the case is with the court at the moment. But you know, it kind of I'm trying to think about this in terms of, isn't what is good for the company what the shareholders would want directors to do?
It should be the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Because over the long term, the purpose should be that you want the best for the company. You want to make a lot of money, maximize revenues and so on. But then timing is an issue. So shareholders are very short term and they always want to go for short term gains. And some of these investments that the directors may want to go into are very long term in nature. It would take a while, a long gestation periods. And in the short term, either there are no profits or there might even be losses. So shareholders may not be very happy with short term losses.
So if you had the kind of Class A and Class B share system that you have in the US, that would help address this problem, right?
I think so, yes. So in the United States, for example, for Facebook, let's say, mm-hmm. Mark Zuckerberg, one share of Mark Zuckerberg would allow him to have, let's say, a vote of 5 or 10 shares more than an ordinary shareholder. So he's holding on to that class where he gets a lot more votes than the shareholding he has.
Yeah, it's a different kind of voting structure. 7:51 on the clock, and the Prime Minister has told Kampung Bahru residents not to rush to sell their land because he believes the land value will increase. Now, he says that the future development of Kampung Bahru will benefit Malays with poor living standards, living in squatter homes and undeveloped areas. So don't simply sell the land because the value will be much higher after the development concept by the government.
Yes, they also recently made the announcement that the property developers can deal directly with landowners. No need for a company to act on their behalf. I think that speeds things up a little bit. I think there is some truth in this kind of advice because the land supply in the city centre is so limited, and Kampung Bahru sits right smack in the middle of all that. And if you compare some of the prices that have been done, for instance, in the famous Tun Razak Exchange, uh-huh. that's owned by 1MDB, that's priced at about 2,700 per square foot. And the land in Kampung Bahru is only a fraction of that, only about 500 per square foot. So chances are there might be a lot of money to be made from holding on to this kind of land, to be a co-investor with the developers.
Right. Well, I think that's smart advice. I mean, it rings some truth, but I don't know whether that was the right thing to do as a prime minister, because on the flip side, the businesses might think, hey, you've kind of stacked the deck against me here now.
Well, if he wants to project himself as a representative of the people, maybe he's putting himself out there as giving good advice to people rather than siding with the corporate, big greedy property developers.
Yeah.
But I think that it's not also, for another reason, it's not so simple. It's quite a complex issue because a lot of landowners might have their own personal financial objectives. They might have more immediate cash needs. needs. So again, we go back to this idea from the previous story, the long-term versus the short-term, right? Long-term directors, short-term shareholders. Again, this one is the fact that property is a very long-term investment. And so if the landowners of Kampung Bahru have short-term needs, then they might need to sell the land.
Yeah, for sure. Well, back to the US now. Match Group, which is the company that owns dating sites Tinder, OkCupid and Match.com, they have filed for an IPO. Now, they're planning to list their shares in the NASDAQ Global Select Market under the ticker MTCH or Match. And it's an interesting time for these kind of dating sites to go public, because previous dating sites, online dating platform Zusk Inc., they withdrew their plans from an IPO after years of delay. So maybe is this the right time?
Yeah, Tinder was an app that was really revolutionary because it was very simple to use and you don't have to set up a complicated profile. It was just based on your Facebook profile, right? So it was very easy to use, and all it did, all it required was like a swipe.
Swipe left or swipe right?
Swipe left if you reject, I think.
I have no idea. Swipe I've never
right,
used it.
If you
to
accept.
Like, okay,
yeah.
Perhaps.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, so they boast of 26 million matches a day, all right? And its leaders have heavily invested in maintaining its reputation as a hookup haven for young people. And nationwide, this company called eHarmony says that the tech assistance for matching people have led to a million marriages worldwide, and the service has spent more than $1 billion in advertising in recent years.
Oh my goodness, a million marriages nationwide. You know what, really, when you look at Tinder, I never really think about the business model that goes behind it. I think it's a clever app that serves its purpose. But I, what is the revenue model for Tinder? I've never thought about it.
Yeah, because it's free to join.
Yeah.
But they are adding more opt-in features. For instance, if you want to restrict people who are really far away and just get matches from people around you, then you can pay for that. Also, if you're traveling and you want to enlarge that geographical feature, you can add that in as well. So a lot of bells and whistles can be added to this kind of service. Also, if you look at the revenue of Match, it's no, it's not a fly-by-night internet company. They made $888 million in revenue in 2014. Net income was about $150 million. That can a lot. They make much more than other internet companies. I think they probably make a lot more than Amazon, which has existed for a long time.
Really? Wow. But I feel like these kinds of online dating matchmaking services could be a tough sell on Wall Street. You remember Ashley Madison?
That's right.
That that business model was very controversial already, and they wanted to go for IPO and just delayed until we saw that massive hacking scandal.
Well, Ashley Madison has a very niche sector, right? It's catering to people who want to engage in infidelity.
Yeah.
So that's a different market altogether.
Yeah.
But Tinder, I suppose, is not too far away, because the objective of Tinder is not really necessarily to get people together for matrimony.
Well, speaking of big tech companies, Julian, now the revered Silicon Valley venture capitalist Michael Moritz, last Friday, he wrote this brutal op-ed in the Financial Times, and he actually criticized the recent boom in quote-unquote unicorn tech businesses that were worth over $1 billion. He called them subprime.
That's right. That's to compare assets to the subprime crisis of 2008, where a lot of property was sold to people who couldn't afford them. So that's the subprime crisis of the property sector. And now he's talking about the subprime crisis of the tech sector, because he feels that a lot of these companies are, quote unquote, seem to be based on the flimsiest of edifices, right?
Wow.
And he's representing a company called Sequoia. They're quite legendary in their investments. I mean, they invested into things like Airbnb, Dropbox, Stripe, WhatsApp. Their investment cost was $3.5 billion, and this was subsequently sold to Facebook for $19 billion. Quite a lot of money, quite a lot of returns over there. But I think right now, people are so attracted by the concept of the unicorn, right?
Right.
A firm that you start up and then it's worth over $1 billion and making people very, very rich, and people are just chasing that dream, which may or may not exist.
Well, he says that it's a bubble. bubble. Should we pay attention to it? I mean, this guy is one of the most successful VCs. I mean, he was an early investor in Google, in YouTube, in Yahoo, in PayPal. Should we be listening to him his warning?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the valuations are also driven to very lofty levels because the entire market, the S&P 500 in the US, has tripled over the last 5 years. And all these tech stocks that are listed there would advance a lot more than the market itself.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.